Who knows what Jay-Z, J.K. Rowling, Bill Gates and Oprah Winfrey all have in common? Okay, I will tell you then. They have all overcome failure in one shape or form to go on to gain success in their respective careers. Welcome to My Perfect Failure. Join us as we delve into the world of our perfect failures. We will interview, explore, and discuss how our perfect failures can lead us to success. Join us and tune in.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of My Perfect Failure. Today, we have another amazing guest for you. So my guest today is a coach, a consultant. She helps companies and individuals navigate change to overcome those big, hairy challenges and imagine truly creative solutions. She is the founder of What's Next, a one-of-a-kind, highly engaging program that helps people figure out their next chapter. Often this need for change is triggered by a major life event. It could be divorce, grief, retirement, the list goes on, or a feeling of being stuck and unsure of what next to do. So a very, very warm welcome to My Perfect Failure, Lauren St. George. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm very well. So I need to thank Lauren. I need to acknowledge that this should have happened last week, this episode, but I had an episode and at work and, you know, I needed to deal with that. So thank you for your flexibility.
That's not a problem at all. Life happens and we adjust as we need to.
Indeed. So I'm excited to speak to you. So it was a pleasure to research you, and I love what you're doing with What's Next. I'm keen to dig into that and find out a little bit more, because a lot of what you're doing and how you're supporting people, I think really resonates with this podcast, because this podcast is around challenges. How do we deal with them, and how do we become unstuck, and nobody wants to stay stuck and not know what to do. So I'm keen to dig into that. So you're based in the US, but you're from South Africa, right?
That is the accent you're hearing. I am originally from South Africa, but I have now lived in the US longer than I lived in South Africa. So this is home now.
Okay. So you're more familiar with the US now than probably South Africa, if you haven't lived there for a number of years.
My dad still lives there, so I certainly have a heart in South Africa. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I mean, when it comes to understanding the landscape and marketing and branding and some of the things from my background, it's probably more US-based at this point.
Okay. Lovely. So what's next? I've kind of intimated that I love, you know, what you're doing with What's Next. What was the inspiration behind What's Next for you?
That's a great question. You know, not to go on and on about my background, but, you know, it started a number of years ago. And at that time, I was running a creative agency, and we started working with an internal group in one of our large clients. And they were doing work around helping companies figure out partnerships and what was next for them. And the methodologies that they were using was really fascinating to me. And shortly after, you know, working with them, a master's degree came into my world. And I'd always said I wanted to do a master's, but I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And then this master's within creativity came into my life. And it was really, it's the human science of how we solve problems.
Yeah.
And it was fascinating. And so I found that I was starting to help clients more on the innovation side, this master's degree, all of these things. And in order to do the master's degree, we had to obviously learn the methodologies and the tools. And I did some of it with business, but I also did it with individuals. And I found that a lot of the same tools that I was using worked equally well for both. And then flash forward a few years later, my mother had retired early from her corporate job. And she said to me, I really wish I'd spent more time thinking about what I was retiring to versus what I was retiring from. And I think we spend a lot of our life kind of bouncing from one thing to the next, following our gut, which is great. Mm. But we don't often put a plan in place to get us there. And so that kind of the culmination of, you know, what I was doing in my business world, my master's degree, and then that comment from my mom got me to this place of going, well, can I create something that helps people to really navigate change and to plan out what they want to do next? And yeah, so that's where that's born from.
No, I love that analogy, because when we think about retiring, we, you know, my guess is, and most people that, not that I know, obviously I know my parents and, you know, family, friends and so forth, but I think, you know, when we retire, if we haven't planned like what we're retiring to, there can be this gigantic void. It's like, when I get up in the morning, what is my purpose? What, you know, what do I do? Because life is fairly regimented. We all do different things, but in terms of the process, we go to work, have lunch, come home, and then that cycle continues. And if we haven't really thought about or explored what's next or what we're retiring to, then we can have this gigantic void.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, their identity is attached to the work that they do. And it makes sense. We spend a lot of time working. So there is that void when you retire. Yeah. And research has shown that for a lot of people, that first year of retirement is idyllic. Mm. It's that honeymoon period. Yeah. Yeah. You can set your own schedule. You can do what you want when you want to. But then they find after that first year that there's a pretty steady decline into depression. Yeah. And so on that side of things, if we're talking retirement, I think, yes, having that plan in place, or at least starting to think about what you're going to do on the other side, is imperative to your mental health.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I can imagine, like you say, a lot of what we do is linked to identity. And when we don't have those actions to do, then it's like, well, who am I? What do I do now? Having a look at your website, which I really like your website, by the way, I will put that link to your website on the show notes. What was fascinating was, is some of your clients that you've got. You've got some wonderful clients. One sticks in my mind. There was a lady in sales for 20 years, and she was, I guess maybe she got to the point where she was thinking about what's next. And when we've done something for 20 years, I imagine that the behavior of doing that action for 20 years is fairly ingrained, and the idea of how to kind of get off that conveyor belt can be quite difficult. So when clients typically approach you, is it curiosity? Is it feeling frustrated? Or are there a number of emotions that they have?
There's three big emotions that people tend to come to me with. One is they've hit a tipping point because they feel stuck and they just don't know what to do. The other is needing clarity. They might have a lot of ideas, but they can't see the forest for the trees. And so they need help thinking through, you know, what options actually work best. And the third is a group that have a fear of taking that first step. And that can be for fear of failure. It can be for fear of change. Yeah. And oftentimes people are coming to me with more than one of those things, right? They could be stuck and unsure of what they want to do next, and they're scared to take the step. But I think they're all at an inflection point of, I can't stand the way I'm feeling, and I've got to do something.
Yeah. And interestingly, so I'd like to explore that more in a second, but interestingly, do you think that there are a lot of us, or a lot of people, that were in that moment where we don't even approach or raise the question of what's next, because we are too, I guess, are compounded or conditioned in living a life that we've just grown accustomed to? And also there's, I imagine as well, like, this is part of what you might deal with in your program, that we've also got our own sort of insecurities about what's next and how do we approach it. But also I imagine you might have a spouse or maybe friends, a friend group, or maybe colleagues that they see us in a certain way. So when we try and sort of, I don't know, grow outside of that identity into doing something else, I imagine there could be some problems there. So I don't know whether you can speak on that at all.
I mean, I think the number one thing that most people are facing is a mindset piece. Okay. And whether that's self-confidence, whether that's, you know, that fear of getting it wrong, which can be conditioned from childhood and our school systems that have taught us that, you know, you got to get the right answer the first time. You know, I think the major roadblock for a lot of people is mindset.
Yeah.
But you know, I think support system from an external standpoint is a huge, it can either be a huge help in terms of overcoming those mindset issues, or it can be a hindrance, because if you aren't supported by the people that are around you through that change, then you've not only got the internal things that are against you, but you've got the external as well. Yeah. So I think support system is imperative.
Yeah. So is it choosing the right support system?
It is choosing the right support system. You know, I think it's by starting to look at who are the 5 to 10 people that you spend the most time with.
Yeah.
And are they truly supportive of you and any change you make in your life? Mm. Or are they going to be the naysayers that try and shoot it down? And that also comes from, you know, for all of us, our brains are designed to seek comfort and to seek patterns and to not go out of our comfort zone. So, you know, that sometimes can be they're trying to be protective of you. But if they're not helping and supporting in the change that you want, then I think you have some choices to make. Do you remove those people from your life, or do you just not talk to them about what you're trying to do? Right. You just neutralize them.
Yeah.
And often with family, you can't get rid of them, right? So you just need to keep some of those things close to your heart, and you need to do it on your own terms. Sarah Blakely, who started the company Spanx, who did become a billionaire from that product, you know, talks about the fact that if she had asked too many people about whether she should cut the feet off of her pantyhose, that most people would say you're insane and don't do it. So, you know, I think you've got to be careful about who you share those things with, but to make sure that you at least have that, you know, one or two people that you can confide in and talk with.
Yeah. It's very similar for me when I started, not that I'm a billionaire, I wish, but when I started this podcast, I purposely didn't talk about it to too many people because I had no background in podcasting. And certainly I felt that if I opened the floodgates and spoke to lots of people that I'm going to do a podcast, it's going to be about failure. I just felt that I just felt that there would have been some, you know, raised eyebrows and maybe some think, well, I'm not sure about that. Maybe focus on this subject. And I felt that might, if I got too many of those maybe question marks, it might have maybe curbed my, you know, it might have curbed my idea of actually doing it. So I literally spoke to about three people and that was it. Mm-hmm. And they were supportive, but also they gave me honest feedback at times, which was quite cool. And then once I'd launched, I was able to open up and tell more people. I definitely concur with Sarah Blakely. I concur, but unfortunately, again, I don't have that your wealth compared to her.
But I think it does show. I think it does show that we do need to be very careful about the things we allow into our brains, right? The talk tracks, and what others are saying to us. I think you can. Our brains are amazing tools that we can use to help propel our success. But we almost have to curate what goes into them. So you know, I think being mindful of what are the things you're listening to and what are you reading and who are you talking to? Because can either foster an environment that's going to, keep your idea alive and your confidence going. Or you can allow things in that are negative and they're going to stop you before you even get started.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think particularly when we're changing, and you'll know more about this from what's next, but particularly when we're seeking to change something or to evolve and to move on, I would imagine the majority of people at that moment is, you know, we're quite nervous and we're quite unsure. And any little question marks that challenge what we're doing, they can be, you know, really detrimental. And that idea that, you know, it's definitely happened to me over the course of my life where I've had, you know, some ideas that have excited me, and I think we battle with our thoughts anyway, because we can have this wonderful idea and then our thoughts will come in. Well, why do you think you can do this? You've got no background. And that thought or idea pretty much goes out the window instantly. You may never even think about it ever again.
Yeah, it's true. And I think that the first tip is being mindful of that voice in your head. And catching yourself in the process of going, no, that's not a great idea. I think that the key is having that rebuttal, right? That one sentence that you can say back to yourself. Because our talk track, our internal talk track is not always our best friend. And that's because, and that evolutionary goes back to the way that our brains are created, and you know, we're not being chased by woolly mammoths anymore, but there is a need to keep us safe. And so when we feel threatened by things like ideas and change, our brain fights to try and keep us safe, to try and keep us in predictable patterns and in our comfort zone. And that's fine. You can stay in your comfort zone, but you're not then going to get into the sort of growth zone where you can really push things and reach a new level of success.
Yeah. And the growth zone is, it's not easy, but I think not easy is good, because, you know, going back to what, you know, your point around mindset, if you've got the right mindset, and that allows us hopefully to approach growth, because we know when we, you know, are feeling uncomfortable, there's something going on there. And if we can get to the other side, you know, there's going to be opportunity, there's going to be excitement, and also, and I guess there's going to be a new life and new opportunities. What I was keen to get into it with regards to what's next is, what does that look like in terms of people accessing the program?
In terms of how do they find me, or at what point do they find me?
Or no, the actual content, the program, in terms of what are you doing with the, you know, your clients? As an example, that lady, you know, you've got lovely examples of your clients that are from a whole range of different situations who are doing your program. And I was excited to I guess get a steer on what, you know, people listening, you know, who are thinking what's next. I think most of us are thinking what's next, but I think a very small portion of us actually tackle the actual what's next quandary. I think we settle for, like, you know, okay, you know, I've been here a while, I know what I'm doing, you know, why don't I continue? So I was keen to get still on the program.
Sure. So the program is designed to be a 6-week experience. And each week we work towards specific goals. The first week is all about reacquainting yourself with yourself. Because I think life happens and we take on obligations from the world around us, whether that's you know, our work life, our spouse, our children, our family. And it's not that those things are bad. You want to have a mutually agreed upon life with your family, but and your spouse. But at times we lose who we are, or we put certain ideas and passions on the shelf and we forget about them. So the first week is really about reacquainting yourself with yourself. And we do that both from an internal point of view and from an external point of view. And then week two is all about coming up with what's your big challenge. What's the thing that you really want to solve? And because I do work with people with a variety of challenges and from different parts of their life that they want to spend time thinking about, to me, the most important part is getting the right question. Because if we spend the time answering the wrong question, you're going to get the wrong answers. And we're not going to...
exams before. 75% through. I've got 25 minutes to go. How do I rework my answer?
Exactly. So we spend a lot of time really digging into what's the right question and why. Yeah. Because I think our why is the thing that's going to motivate us moving forward. Like, why do I want to do this? Yeah. Why is it necessary within my life?
It must and be. Then, sorry, carry on.
Mm-hmm, no, it must
no,
be.
No. I'll let you finish, then I can come in.
The third and fourth week are really around now ideating and coming up with lots of ideas. The more, the better. And I really push people to come up with as many ideas as possible. But I run the program as a group coaching. And so typically I have about 4 to 7 people within the group. They've all been vetted. I've had calls with everyone, make sure that we're all in the right sort of place in feeling stuck. I can certainly support people who know where they want to go, but the program itself is designed for those who are really feeling stuck. And what's beautiful about having a group of people coming together is that you automatically have accountability. You're showing up for them as well as for yourself. You have a community that goes on with you after the program is done. You care about each other's progress. So you have a sounding board, because over 6 weeks you get to know each other really well. But when we get into week 3 and 4, it's really fantastic because people are coming in with different experiences, with different expertise, with different ideas. And that's the opportunity for everyone to share with each other. And so that allows you to get some thinking from different angles and from perspectives that you've never thought of before. Because again, if we keep trying to solve the same question, thinking in the same way, we're not going to get any new thinking. So that's really a fantastic time. Then we start weeding through all the ideas to really figure out, you know, what makes the most sense and what is going to answer that question. And it's imperative to me that we, that by the end of the 6 weeks, that people are leaving with a plan in place. What are the immediate next steps that I need to take in order to reach this goal that I've now set for myself, or to take this idea and make it a reality? So, you know, it's important to me that people leave with a tangible thing that they can put in place. And oftentimes I find people start doing it before the program's even
really that's how eager that they've unearthed, I guess, what's next for them and what that might look like. That so does the vision change? So when you initially engage these guys and they come in, and has their sort of ultimate vision of where they want to go with their life, does it surprise them in terms of what they're thinking about now to when they started the program?
It does. I mean, I've had some people that came in that have come in, what, you know, really seeking to make change within their career. And because you're already starting to put your head in that space, they've actually found jobs in the process. And then it's like, well, that's solved. I can tick that off the list. So what's the next thing? And so we, you know, we'll start delving into a different part of their life. Or for some, I think they come in thinking this is the challenge, but the more time we spend on the front end, asking those important questions about, you know, what really makes you tick and what's important to you. I've had people change direction from thinking that the next thing is finding the next job and just stepping up in terms of seniority, to going, you know, really, I've always wanted to start my own business. And if I don't do it now, then will I ever? So, you know, we go down that path of, you know, what would that look like for them? And providing, again, if you're afraid of change, or, you know, you're afraid of taking that first step, to me, having a really concrete, solid plan takes some of the fear away, right? Yeah, because you actually know what you need to do. You've taken some of the guesswork out of it.
Yeah. And also what I love about what you're doing as well, we spoke about a little bit earlier around when we're going to start something new, we only want to tell a handful of people. You use Sarah Blakely as an example. And what you're giving your guys is that community. So you've got your cohorts that you can sort of dovetail ideas, have discussions about. What do you think about this? Do you think it's a good idea? If you don't, why not? So so your guys actually get that. So you know, you almost don't need to. You know, you might want to, but there isn't sort of necessity to go outside of that cohort and speak to other people because it already exists for you.
Absolutely. They do become your tribe, because it is a pretty intense 6 weeks together. But I found that it's one of the fastest ways to actually make change happen. So if you're dedicating the time to actually tackling the thing you've been putting off, not really looking at that dream that you have because you don't think you can do it, and you spend 6 weeks of, you know, we talk twice a week. We do a group call twice a week. I'm available, you know, whenever anyone needs me in between. And there's, you know, homework to do on your own. So it's pretty intensive over that period of time. But yes, you form a community. It becomes your tribe. There's empowerment in it, because you may be solving different challenges But you are not alone in this feeling of I need more, or I'm feeling stuck and I don't know where to go. So knowing that there's 4, 5, 7 people on the same journey as you can be very empowering as well. So you're right, it does, but they do become your group.
Yeah. And just from, I guess, outside looking in for you, when you've got these guys that come to you and you see their evolution and you see the, you know, change of direction and whatever their focus might be, do you have, I don't know the best way to put it. Do you think there's a danger that we all face when we don't actually engage that question of what's next?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the danger is, as far as we know, we have one life to live. At least we're conscious of one life, and so, you can live the comfortable life and not push outside of your comfort zone. But I think the danger is then, always thinking back on what if, and so I think I personally believe that trying it and not getting it right the first time, is far better than never trying at all and constantly wondering what if I had tried that. But it takes courage. It takes courage to take that first step. It's not, you know, it's why staying in your comfort zone is that much easier, because change and success and going after those dreams it's not easy.
Absolutely. I think it's very easy to exist, you know, within a comfort zone, but strangely, when we stay within our comfort zone, we never really represent our true self in terms of how many days do we have where we're exhilarated by what we're doing or what we've overcome or what we found, even in those difficult moments because I imagine that a number of your guys that come and take up your program, there must be some fear associated with coming and trying something new, particularly if you've been working in a job for 20 years. But when they, you know, I'm pretty emphatic, even after their first session, they must get that surge of adrenaline because they've actually tackled something. They're actually on that path.
Absolutely. So, you know, there's motivation and action, and you know, people wonder how do you get the motivation to do something? Sometimes you have to force yourself to do the action. And with doing the action, you will start to feel motivated.
Yeah.
So, you know, an example of that is for many of us, getting off the couch and stop binge watching whatever you're watching and actually getting to the gym can be a hard thing. But there's less motivation there. But the sheer action, I think we all have, the sheer action of actually doing it starts to feel better. You start to feel more motivated. It's easier to get up and go to the gym until you get to that point where you actually look forward to it. And so you change the cycle.
Yeah.
It's far easier if you start with motivation. And there are instances where you'll have motivation and then that's followed by action. But I think in most cases, it's that you have to do the action.
Yeah.
You have to get off the couch and go and do it. And that's the hard part. You have to almost force yourself to do it. Now there's techniques and tactics that you can do that make that a little easier.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, there's no way around it. No one's going to do it for you. You have to do it yourself.
Yeah, totally. And in terms of just, I guess, a curiosity question around guys that have undertaken your program, I'm thinking possibly that once they've completed the program, that they've almost developed not just the what's next, but a different skill where they're able to engage that what next idea or, you know, and whatever, you know, because I guess some can be small in terms of what's next, you know, little add-ons, but some might be another major situation in, you know, 5 years or 3 years or whatever it may be, 10 years.
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the skills that I hope people, and I feel people have left the program with is creativity itself. And creativity often is, I think, misconstrued that it's, you know, the ability to paint or draw. Creativity really is the ability to come up with new and novel ideas. And it's a skill that anyone can learn. We naturally have it. But like any muscle, it has to be developed. And the time that we spend together is using a lot of those tools that help you to think more nimbly, to come up with new ideas. And so my hope is that the people not only are planning the next step, but that next step might not be the right one, but it, you've started the motion, but you now have the tools and the ability to go back to that plan and adjust it, because life changes, ideas change. I've had people who are like, I always thought I wanted to do this. I went and tried it and I've scratched that itch, but that's not what I want to do. But now I'm on the right road. Now I've got new ideas. Now I'm ready to try something new. So they've kind of gotten momentum, and they've gotten themselves off of the proverbial couch. So I hope that and I've seen that people are leaving with new skills in terms of being able to problem solve better. They've also are seeing opportunities that they never saw before. Yeah. It's much like when you're thinking about buying a new car, and you've now decided on make and model, and then all of a sudden that's the only car you see driving around you. Like, did everyone just decide to buy this? And it's you've changed the way that you look at things, and now new ideas, new things are presenting themselves. Now everyone's driving that car. So, just in embarking on trying to answer that question of what's next, people within my program have now started to see new opportunities arise, or things that before they would have been like, they now are like, oh, how can I take that and use it to work towards this goal? Those are life skills that can go with you forever.
Huge life skills. Huge. And just in keeping with this podcast, which is around failure and overcoming situations, your guys are already overcoming situations. The fact that they've had the courage to actually think about what's next and actually engage that by connecting with you. In order to do anything great, there's going to be setbacks. It's not like a clean runway where you take off and there's no bumps. There's going to be bumps, which is fine, because that's the way it's meant to be to achieve something great. Are these guys equipped with the resilience to understand that their vision and what's next is a wonderful opportunity, but don't expect it to be sort of a home run immediately?
We certainly talk. I mean, mindset is just as important to me as the plan that they leave with. And so we certainly talk about and try to put things in place to help. Accountability partners to help you stay on track. Compassion for yourself, because you're not always going to get it right the first time. But shifting the mindset to that of more of an innovator, right? When that whole idea of early ugly often, try to look at that that idea that you have, or the next step that you need to take on that road to getting to your goal, as an opportunity to learn, shifting it more to I'm creating a service or a product, and I'm not going to get it right the first time. We're going to prototype it. We're going to try it out. We're going to learn, and we're going to evolve. I think it's the Dyson vacuum. They had 500 prototypes before one went on the shelf. The first one's not necessarily going to be right. Yeah. So we certainly talk about that. That you need to have compassion for any of the setbacks. You need to reward yourself for the progress you're making. And if you can shift your mind from I got it wrong to more of a, well, not yet, I'm not there yet, but I can see the change and the progress that I've made, and I can celebrate that, and I can enjoy the journey just as much as the destination that I'm trying to get to. Those are all things that we talk about. Along with what's that voice that's going to come up along the way that's going to say, that's not a good idea. Why are you doing this? How do we counteract that so that we can keep going?
Oh, I love it. It sounds an amazing course. And hopefully we can put links and so forth in the show notes. And for people that are listening, I guess that, well, I'll let you answer the question, but I imagine this is virtual, so people don't have to be based in the States to do the course, do they?
They don't have to be based in the States. We certainly can accommodate multiple time zones.
Okay, lovely. So I wanted to ask a question around the great resignation. I felt obviously the pandemic happened and lots going on there. People starting to think about actually maybe they are asking the question, what's next? Because I think you know, outwardly we're thinking with a different lens because of, you know, what's important. Have you seen any shifts around that, around, you know, that period we've been through and people maybe thinking a little bit more about, you know, what represents a good life for them?
I mean, certainly we've seen it in the numbers of people that have done the great resignation, and it has been one of the few times or the only times in recent history and in our lifetime where the entire globe faced the same problem. Mm-hmm. And so I think that just the scale at which people have started to look at that question of what's next is certainly like none we've ever seen before. I launched during the pandemic, and so certainly I've been encountering people who have certainly found themselves sitting at home, not able to be out in the world interacting the same way that they were able to, and certainly have had a lot more time on their hands to think about their current life and is this what they want. Hopefully that those thoughts that people were having during the pandemic don't just get shelved, right? That we don't just fall back into our old patterns pre-pandemic.
That's the danger. Mm-hmm. I think that's why we need to do some. I think we need to act almost immediately, because if we don't, I think it's very easy to slip back into what we were doing before, and those thoughts just ebb away. So what would your advice be to people listening now? That I actually can I ask two questions. One, are there certain triggers that people should be aware of that maybe that's your sort of trigger to maybe explore what's next, but they maybe haven't before?
I think there's probably several, but one of them is if there's been something that has over a long period of time has just not left your mind, that one thing that you just keep thinking about, the thing I wish I had tried, if it hasn't gone away, if it hasn't just been a passing thought and it keeps recurring and coming back, that's probably a time to do something about it, because it's just going to continue to be in your mind. I mean, I think that really propels people towards, I probably need to do something about it, or I need to shut up and stop thinking about it. I think that's definitely something to be looking out for. The other is, I think, you know, on a smaller scale, unlike the pandemic, there are pivotal moments within our own life that will propel us to do things. And that can be, you know, it can be becoming an empty nester. Now what am I going to do? The kids have gone off to school. So there tend to be these big changes in our life where we reevaluate where we're at and we decide whether we want to do something different or, you know, the thing that we've put off.
Yeah. It's almost that what next ideology to me. I'm just wondering, at what point should we, you know, should we have that curiosity where we explore what's next? Because I think we touched upon it earlier, you know, the way that the life presents itself to us is quite a rigid plan. And it's like once you get on that conveyor belt, it's changed, I guess, from my parents' generation and so forth, but it's still reasonably rigid in terms of what the base of the plan should be. So what I love about what you're doing, it raises that curiosity to engage, you know, what that might next situation might be. But it's like, you know, I'd like it to be introduced early so we have that ability to engage what's next. And
I think that that's something that that parents can certainly start thinking about, is how do you help your children navigate that? How do you teach them to be more curious from a young age? How do you foster that sense of wonder and trying new things? And I have a 10-month-old right now who's learning how to walk.
Oh, wow.
if he fell down a few times and I looked at him and went, "Oh, don't bother, you're never going to get it right."
Yeah.
then I've stopped that progress. And I think if, you know, no one would ever tell a child to give up on trying to walk.
Totally. Yeah.
But we do that as we get older. We hit this point of like, "Oh, I can't try that. I might fall down." Mm. I think we can instill that within our own children, and we have the ability to help future generations to be more open to change. And you're right, from your generation, your parents' generation, my parents' generation to now, we've seen shifts. Mm. It used to be people worked for companies for 20, 30, 40 years, and they retired from their company and that was it. Mm. We now, it's not unusual to see people who've bounced around from company to company and they've spent a year or two and then moved on to the next. Mm. That's no longer seen as strange.
Yeah.
I think the next frontier is going to be companies being okay with gaps within people's resumes.
Yeah,
those periods of time where people have taken time off to figure out what's next, or they've had children have decided to stay home, or whatever those things are, that doesn't mean that you're less of an employee because you took time off and there's a gap in your resume. I think that's the next sort of milestone, as being accepting of people's growth and making changes and trying new things, and that your career is not a straightforward line.
Yeah, I'm just laughing at a 360 degree shift where you get a prospective employee looking at your CV and saying, "Well, you've got no gaps in your CV. What have you been doing? You've just been working at the same place. What's going on?" That'd be funny if that's probably in a number. It's going to be a few years before that happens, but it'd be funny if that ever does happen. I'm conscious of your time, so we can wrap this up. But what I wanted to ask is, Where's the best place for people to find you and find out more about what's next, your program?
The best place to find me is on my website. It's answerwhatsnext.com.
Okay.
There is a link on the front page where you can schedule a call with me. I'm happy to talk you through the program in far more detail than we covered today. So you can find me there. You can sign up for my newsletter, which is a great way to get every week. I put out something new, so just to inspire and to keep people motivated, to help think of new ideas. So that's definitely a way to engage and learn more about me and the kind of content that I put out.
Okay, lovely, lovely. I will sign up to that, I think. Sounds interesting. And the last question is the reoccurring question. So at the end of every episode, I always ask every guest if they could invite three inspirational people for dinner. They can be alive or they can be past. Who would they invite? So I offer you the same question.
It's a great question, and I'm sure I could have a much longer list, but I tried my best to narrow it down. The first that I would put on that list is Lizzo. I love the positivity that she has, her message that she's putting out into the world right now, and her journey of finding her voice and who she is, because we're all going on that journey of trying to be authentic to ourselves, and not always getting it right the first time. So where she started off in her career versus where she is now, she's done her own progression of figuring out what's right for her. The other is Nelson Mandela. Being South African, certainly he has a big spot in my heart. What I'd love to talk to him about is forgiveness. Such a big topic, and I don't understand how he was able to show forgiveness the way he did.
Yeah, totally, totally.
And the third person, because I think you have to keep things a little light, I'd love Chelsea Handler. She's a comedian, but I also like the way she calls it like she sees it. I think we all aspire to, again, be more authentic and be true to ourselves. So that would be my three.
Yeah, I think they would all like your program as well. I think they're definitely fans of your program. So that would be a fab dinner. That would be fun.
It would be.
Yeah, you've pretty much got everything covered there, really, haven't you?
It would certainly be an engaging evening.
Absolutely, absolutely. Lauren, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, meeting you at last, and getting a greater steer on the opportunities that exist when we ask that question, what's next? I think it's a question that I want more and more people to ask that question, because I think it can change their lives. So if you want to change your life, you just simply need to ask what's next and then act. So hopefully we can have other discussions around, you know, how things are going in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thank you, everybody, for tuning into this episode of My Perfect Failure. As you know, we're always looking and keen to grow the show. So please do share this episode far and wide. I'm sure there are people that are asking that question, what's next? So please make sure they do hear this episode. And your feedback is always incredibly welcome. So we're keen to hear about what you like, potentially what you don't like. And you can email me at paul@myperfectfailure.com, or alternatively, you can find me on the website, www.myperfectfailure.com, and you can just leave a note on the contact page. So until the next time, take care for now. Bye.
Thanks for listening to My Perfect Failure podcast. Be sure to visit www.myperfectfailure.com to join the conversation. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Google Play. Look out for our next episode.